From the American Association of Nurse Practitioners, I'm your host, Dr. Sophia Thomas, and this is NP Pulse, the voice of the nurse practitioner. Welcome to NP Pulse, AANP's official podcast, bringing you unique nurse practitioner voices and expertise on issues that matter to NPs and to our patients. Today's topic is one I have been so excited to share with listeners. With AANP Vice President of Professional Practice Johnny Sue Wiwiwarjane, we'll be discussing everything related to weight loss, from benefits to a healthy weight, a balanced diet, and exercise, to combating the noise around BMI, fad diets, and just general confusion about what it means to be at a healthy weight and how we, as nurse practitioners, may feel that pressure just as much as our patients. Johnny Sue, in addition to her role at AANP, is also Dean of the School of Nursing at Belhaven University. She is an NP expert, a leader, and has a wealth of stories and personal experiences around these topics that I'm looking very forward to hearing today. Johnny Sue, welcome to NP Pulse.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Johnny, I'm so glad to have you. We are going to talk about a very interesting topic for me, overweight and obesity today. But before we get into that, I want to hear about you and your journey to becoming a nurse practitioner and even your current work as Dean of the School of Nursing at Belhaven University.
My journey started a long time ago in the late 90s after I finished nursing school. I knew that I wanted to do more than being a bedside nurse. So I opted for a nurse practitioner role. And at that time in 97, 98, it was still early in the nurse practitioner role. It wasn't infantile, but we were early and we were just getting started and just learning what we could do and what we needed to do. After I did that, I went to work in occupational health for a while and in primary care. As most of us do, we can't just do one thing. So we need to do two or three. So I did some occupational health, some primary care, and realized pretty quickly that I wanted to obtain my doctorate. So that was before the DNP. And in 2003, I enrolled in a PhD program at the University of Mississippi Medical Center and completed my PhD in nursing after, you know, 7 or 8 long years. And in that time, I continued to work as an NP as well as working full-time in academia from the associate degree level all the way into nurse practitioner education, and continued to practice in college health and primary care health and nursing home skilled nursing facilities. Did a little bit of it all and throughout my career, and then ended up at the University of Mississippi Medical Center for a couple of years as Associate Dean for Academics. And that's when my son was born, and I actually stopped practicing at that point. So then I continued my work as an academician and went on to be Dean at Radford University in Virginia during the COVID pandemic, and came back to Jackson, Mississippi, and now working with Belhaven University at their School of Nursing. So that's my journey.
That's a long journey, and you have diversified yourself. You're like the Swiss Army knife of nurse practitioners. One thing that we need to talk about that is an important topic that people are now getting more and more of an awareness about is overweight and obesity. And obesity really as a disease as opposed to a symptom or a lifestyle choice. And you've had some recent interest in that as well, right?
I don't know that you'd call it recent. My obesity journey has been very personal and very much since puberty, really. I've always had trouble with my weight, as many of us do. But then as I got older, I always worked on it. I always struggled to keep my weight down. And even when I would gain weight, I would try to lose it. And so many of our patients and so many of our colleagues, the struggle was just every day. I tried everything. I think the only weight loss program I haven't made friends with is Jenny Craig, and it's just because I never got around to her. But I've tried medical management, and this was early days. Shortly after becoming a nurse practitioner, I went straight to physician's weight loss. I took different medications under a physician and nurse practitioner care. I tried Meridia before I think it was taken off the market. I mean, I was never super obese, or I never really hit the BMI of 40, but I was always that 35, 36, 37, and I'm a short. So it was really hard for me to do that. And I was always successful at getting some weight off, but never successful at keeping it off.
And as a patient, I'm sure you heard from every provider that you saw, diet and exercise, and you tried all the different things that were out there. And I remember Meridia way back in the day.
Yes. That was one of the first ones that came out. Oh, the Zenical, Ally, whatever we call it now.
Yep.
How difficult is that one? It's still on the market and it's still recommended, but it sure is a difficult one to take with the side effects and the loose stools and the difficulty in taking it. It was just, it's not a very user-friendly medication.
No, not at all. And you started as a teenager, as an adolescent, being overweight. How did you feel? Were you as an adolescent self-conscious, or did you have self-esteem problems? Because I know when I talk to my patients, many of them, and they hear it from me all the time, talking about a healthy lifestyle and exercise, 30 minutes to an hour, 4 to 5 days a week, et cetera, et cetera. Many of them hear that and try it, and they just feel like such failures.
I wouldn't say I necessarily had a self-esteem issue, but I will say that I was very self-conscious and really, really did struggle with the thoughts of not being in control. Why are all of my friends able to eat like I do, or like I think I did, and I can't keep my weight under control? And it's just a real struggle about why me, that victimology, why me. When my mom was tiny, my mom was a size 4. She never had issues with her weight, and I was a 14.
But so that's obesity as a disease versus obesity as a symptom of something else. And
absolutely. And always seeing myself as heavy. Even today, I see myself and I look at myself and I see the heavy girl, the dysmorphia. It's really real.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And people don't understand, for the regular patients out there listening to us, hearing about healthcare topics, what about the body mass index? Talk about the body mass index, the BMI, where we divide between over a normal, quote, normal weight versus overweight, and then moving on into obesity.
As more and more research has come out, we know that body mass index is not the best marker of overweight and obesity that we have. It's a good range, and it's a good beginning, good guideline.
Yeah.
Yes, good guideline. But when you look back on the history of it, it was developed for insurance actuaries and for insurance, life insurance purposes, I believe. And what we're also seeing is that different races, it's different for each one, particularly in the Asian population, where women are typically shorter and more petite. So someone might be obese at a body mass index of 24, 25, or even 27, 28. They might really be in that obese category rather than overweight, where it looks like it is on the scale. So it's really not the best indicator of that. What we're seeing more and more in the literature is the waist to hip ratio is one of the better measures of overweight and obesity.
And so when we have our patients that are dealing with this, you said you've tried multiple different things. I'm sure you tried all the different pills and teas and all the different diets. You probably did the cabbage diet way back when, and
grapefruit, cabbage diet, grapefruit diet. Yes, you name it.
And our patients do that as well, and it can be frustrating. While we talk about exercise, some people, I think, can just exercise and the weight falls right off. Other people, no matter what they do, it just doesn't seem to make a difference, even to their waist to hip ratio, even to their body frame.
Absolutely. The adage these days is that you can't outrun a bad diet. It really is. While the exercise and healthy lifestyle and moving is important, doing some strength training, some cardio is all very important. Really, it's that intake. It is what we're eating and how it works with our bodies. Our body metabolism, everybody's, is just a little bit different. And what I've learned is that the exercise is not as big of a deal in losing weight for me as the intake and the food.
Exactly. And so what was it that finally, you went through all of these different things, what was it that finally was the key for you? Because I know for different people, it can be different things. And we've got a lot of medications out right now, the GLP-1s that people are using. What was the key for you in your journey?
I'll share with you that when I hit my highest, of course, was in pregnancy at 45. And I was about...
Your BMI or age?
I was 45. My age was 45.
Okay.
And I was pregnant with my only child. I had some issues with recurrent miscarriages, not necessarily fertility. But when I was pregnant with him, I became gestational diabetic. And I knew that I had to do something because I knew that immediately put me at risk for developing diabetes. And I'd always said, the one thing I want to do everything I can to keep from developing is diabetes. But going back a little bit, I had some success in my 30s with phentermine and topiramate, or that is Qsymia. I had success with it before Qsymia came out. But again, it was that maintenance. I was able to get it off, keep it off for a couple of years. But as soon as I was trying to defend my dissertation and needed to come off the Topamax because I had a little trouble with some of the side effects with it, with the word searching and those kind of things, I got off of it, the weight immediately came back. But shifting on to, I'm back at 45 and I'm pregnant. I have my little boy and I am desperate to do whatever I need to do to figure out how to get my weight under control. So at that point, when he was about 15 months old, I underwent gastric sleeve surgery because I was like, what else can I do? Let me be as drastic as possible and do that. So I did the pre-diet. I lost about 20 pounds before going under the knife, shrinking my liver. Did that, lost about 40 pounds, got down to about 170 pounds on that and stalled. Couldn't budge past that. Then during COVID, weight turned around and started going back up. I never got back to the highest that I was, but I got right back close to that 200 a pound marker, and then the GLP-1s were starting to really take hold for patients for treating obesity. So I came back to the bariatric center and said, get me on the medical side and let's see if we can augment my bariatric surgery with medication. And so that's what we did. And I ended up on one of the GLP-1s. And I have been taking that since September of 22 now. And it has been the game changer for me in getting down to a normal BMI, even though that's not necessarily the best marker. And I'm not sure on the maintenance side. Not sure what that looks like because that's really new with the GLP-1s. We don't know how it's going to work with maintenance, whether we're going to be extending the time between the GLP-1 doses or if it's we decrease the dose and keep you on the same dose. My healthcare providers that are bariatric and overweight and obesity specialists, they're like, we don't know what it's going to look like. It's going to be more trial and error and patient to patient. But I'm so grateful that people are beginning to realize that it's not one size fits all, for lack of a better way to put it, and that providers are willing to go the distance and say, when we get to this point, if we have to, we'll add a medication. We'll change a medication and see where we go. Is it going to be that what we call food noise is coming back? Do you want food? Is your appetite coming back more so? Because right now, I truly have to make myself eat, and it makes me more mindful of what I put in my mouth and how much of it I eat. I'm not going to tell you that I eat everything perfectly. I don't. It is hard, and I have a sweet tooth, but I do, and I have a six-year-old, which is really hard to be around all that food. But this has helped me be able to control my desire for those junk foods and bad foods and be able to make better and healthier choices and sometimes even crave the healthier food. I'll tell you the biggest thing that I struggle with, and it's part of it is because of the bariatric surgery, but it's staying hydrated enough. Because of the small size of my stomach, I have a little bit of trouble drinking enough. I just have to sit throughout the day and make sure that I'm getting getting enough water and enough liquid going through the day.
Exactly. So let me ask you this, where you're more conscious of what you're eating now, which is what we all should be doing.
Sure.
Obviously, you've cut your calories, you're eating less, and then you're making healthier choices, which is what we all should be doing anyway, is living a healthier lifestyle. I think one thing that people need to consider is that while they're losing this weight, we have to consider nutritional deficiencies and things like that. Are you familiar with that and the nutrients involved?
Totally. And from a patient perspective, even though that gastric sleeve surgery is not and doesn't typically create an absorption issue, my providers do monitor my vitamin and mineral levels. Because I have had bariatric surgery, not only am I taking medications to help me lose weight, but vitamin D, vitamin A, especially your fat-soluble vitamins, vitamin E, they monitor my B vitamins and calcium, all of those things, the protein level, which has remained pretty good because as a bariatric surgery patient, the thing that you're taught to in your new way of eating is hit the protein first. Go make sure you get that protein before you, if you can't hold anything else, make sure you eat your protein. That's been real important. And I think a real key to my success, and I know that a lot of people have had success using the GLP-1 medications without bariatric surgery. But for me, I think it really augmented my progress. And I'm not sure that I would have been as successful with the GLP-1 alone as I've been with the restriction and the GLP-1 medications.
Yeah, and the treatment is very individualized, as you said. I think more and more people are getting on the GLP-1s and others. People realize now that I remember when they first came out, and I was at a nurse practitioner conference, and we were having a presentation about one of them, and they were talking about this drug for diabetes, and the side effect was that some people would be losing weight. I said, sign me up, I'll take that. No risk of hypoglycemia, sign me up. And flash forward about 5 years, and now we've realized that there are all these different medications that were originally developed for diabetes that are now impacting lives of so many people, decreasing cardiovascular risk, helping to lower blood pressure, preventing diabetes and those people who were borderline diabetic. It's just really been amazing to see. But at the same time, I think it's important for people to understand that if they decide to, as a patient, get on the GLP-1s or as a prescriber, it's important to educate yourself on the importance of not just taking that injection every week or every day, depending on what medication, but the nutritional vitamin and minerals, the fluids that you need to be taking in, because there are side effects, right? And there are things to be concerned about.
Absolutely. Some of the side effects, of course, are constipation because they slow gastric emptying. And that has figuring out how to combat that. I take extra magnesium. That helps me. I'm also on metformin to try to reduce my insulin resistance. Those are things, and metformin by nature does tend to help just a number of things to do. And I'm not necessarily one who advocates taking a pill to offset side effects, but I don't necessarily think that the metformin is a bad thing. We've been giving it off-label, and we've been giving it for pre-diabetes for years. I think it's just one thing in the toolbox. And also, we have the issue with insurance coverage. Sometimes it's very difficult to get the GLP-1s covered by some insurances for weight loss and for obesity. And it helps to have that step therapy if you are pre-diabetic. It's just, there are a battery of issues that come along with it. But for me, I'm more than happy to deal with the side effects and to do whatever I need to combat that to stay at a healthy weight, because at 51 years old, I've got a 6-year-old to get raised, and I have a strong family history of cardiovascular disease, and I want to make sure that I do everything that I can to reduce my risk. So that was really where the journey turned for me, and it's been, I think these drugs are wonderful for the people that they work for and the people who are willing to work with their providers and really deal with the side effects that aren't always that pleasant.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's important that when prescribing, if we're prescribers, we need to prescribe responsibly. I know sometimes people are using compounding pharmacies. We want to be sure that wherever the medication's coming from is a reputable compounding pharmacy, or for the regular prescriptions, getting them at the pharmacy. Sometimes they do cost a lot of money, but I tell you, it's a lot cheaper than paying for liposuction and a tummy tuck if you look at the compare and contrast.
And if it can prevent that disease, if it can prevent the long-term cardiovascular or even push them out 20, 25 years, if it doesn't totally prevent it, if it will keep you from getting it for another 20 or so years, it reduces your overall course and your overall cost and the burden of disease.
Absolutely. And for patients, it's so important that they follow through with their healthcare providers as well and be sure that they're seeing somebody reputable. But again, the weight loss journey is so challenging. It's very individualized. It's not just as easy as diet and exercise. And I have a colleague who tried everything to lose weight. And at one point, she got to the point where when she was 9 months pregnant with her first child, she got back up to that weight as a postmenopausal adult and finally just said, I can't take it anymore. And so she started taking the GLP-1 and lost 50 pounds. And it was just totally, along with lifestyle change, along with following a keto diet. And now she is no longer having to take blood pressure medication. She's no longer having to take cholesterol medication. And she has learned through the hunger control, the smaller stomach and the gastric emptying, that she's not as hungry and she's making healthier choices. But I think using the medication as a tool to get that ball rolling has really impacted her. And I've spoken with several other colleagues and friends as well who have been through this same journey. And I'm curious now, 20 years from now, what our cardiac life expectancy is going to be now that we have these important medications available. I think they're life-changing and they make a difference. And I appreciate you, Johnny, joining me today to talk about this.
Oh, I'm thrilled to do so and appreciate the opportunity to share, because it's hard to understand the obesity and the dynamics when you haven't experienced it, when you haven't experienced that bias. And it's really important that we really pull out that empathy when we're dealing with our patients that struggle with weight, because I don't want to play the victim, but it's not always all their fault. You throw in hormones and body changes that come with menopause, that come with pregnancy, that come with, especially for women, PCOS, come with men when their testosterone decreases, any number of things that, or somebody has a catastrophic event and they become immobile and they gain weight. And then they have trouble when they're back mobile getting it back off. There are just a lot of things that play into obesity that we aren't always great at being empathetic about.
I agree. And people do experience bias and a lack of understanding. So I hope as healthcare providers, we do understand the importance of looking, as we do, at the patient holistically, looking at all factors in their life, consider other things. Like you said, the hormones, the menopause. A lot plays into the diagnosis of overweight and obesity, and it's important for us to recognize that it is a medical diagnosis and can be a symptom of other things, or it can cause further healthcare complications down the road.
And chronic disease is not only a medical diagnosis, it is a chronic disease that is likely going to require management for the rest of one's life. It's unfortunate, but you've got to manage it. Even if it's not with medication, but you're diabetic, your patient who's diabetic, you're not going to take them off of their medication just because their blood sugar normalizes. You're going to leave them on that medicine to keep them normalized.
Exactly. So we'll have a healthier population in the future. Johnny, thank you so much for joining me today on NP Pulse. You've been a great guest, and I want to thank you for sharing your personal journey. I hope you've inspired other people to look at good health for themselves and look at the opportunities out there. We have so much more available to us now to manage the diagnosis and the chronic condition of obesity. I hope that people take advantage of that and they live long, happy, healthy, prosperous lives. So thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Johnny Sue, thank you for joining us.
and we're all excited about your new role here at AANP. You can find more resource about obesity and weight loss by visiting AANP.org, which has several newsfeed articles and CE courses on the subject of obesity. And calling all nurse practitioners, it's time to strap on your boots, tune your guitars, and join me and over 1,000 other NPs as we gather in Nashville, Tennessee, for the 2024 AANP National Conference. From June 25th through June 30th in Music City, we will experience hands-on workshops, network, earn continuing education credits, and become inspired by our keynote speaker, Dominique Awesome Dawson Dawes, a gold medal-winning gymnast and a current business owner and author. I can't wait to see Dominique Dawes. We can't wait to see you in Nashville from June 25th through June 30th. And if you can't attend in person, an on-demand option is available. Visit AANP.org for more details and to browse special conference rates on attendance and housing reserved for AANP members. I know I've already made my reservations. And thank you for listening. Please subscribe to this podcast, share it with your colleagues, and check back regularly for new episodes. And as always, be kind, be safe, be effective, and be the voice of the nurse practitioner.